Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. Just a reminder that you will no longer receive a CPD point by listening to this episode of the podcast. But if you subscribe and listen to the most recent episodes of Sound Optometry, you can gain CPD points. I hope you enjoy this episode of Sound Optometry. Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Welcome to Sound Optometry, the podcast from Docket that provides high-quality continuing education and professional development for all GOC-registered optometrists. You can gain one CPD point by listening to this podcast and completing the exercise on our website, docket.info. With case studies and in-depth conversations, each month we explore the topics that matter the most to optometrists around the country. This month, we'll be looking at mental health and well-being in optometry. The last few years, dominated by COVID-19, have been tough for everyone. Global mental health has undoubtedly taken a tumble. The World Health Organization declared that cases of anxiety and depression increased by 25% because of the pandemic. The outlook seems even worse for healthcare workers. A study from Queen Mary University of London found that healthcare professionals working through COVID-19 were more than three times more likely to be burned out compared to non-healthcare workers. With services across the NHS stretched, the role of optometry is becoming even more important in healthcare. But that's only piling on the pressure for you in the workplace. In this episode, we'll explore how to keep on top of mental health in the workplace, from knowing the signs in yourself to looking out for colleagues. Later on, I'll be getting some tips from former GP turned wellbeing expert, Dr. Rachel Morris, on how to be resilient at work.
What can we control? Well, firstly, how we look after ourselves, our own wellbeing. So things like making sure you're being active, making sure you're eating well, you're getting to bed on time, that you're not self-soothing with lots and lots of alcohol and chocolate, for example, because we know that that will make you feel worse. Secondly, we can take control of how we respond to certain situations.
To kick us off though, joining me now is Sheena Tanishar. Sheena is a high street optometrist, but after her own experience of anxiety, she decided to train in therapy, mindfulness and life coaching. She now works part-time in optometry, but she also runs training sessions on mental health for fellow optometrists. Sheena, welcome to Sound Optometry.
Thank you so much for having me.
So take me back to the start of your story. When did you first realise that you needed to work on your mental health?
My anxiety and my depression stemmed from when I was a teenager, if I'm honest with you. But as a teenager, I hadn't even heard of the word anxiety. And in my culture, there's a lot of stigma around mental health as well. So during my teenage years and things like that, the reason, you know, it wasn't even spoken about is just because it was something that nobody discussed. It just wasn't acknowledged at all. So when I did start to acknowledging it and start working on it, it was daunting, it was overwhelming, it was difficult just to even speak to my family members. And so it took me until I went to university and actually had a breakdown and then quit my degree. And that's when the first time I had counselling. And to be honest, it took that breakdown to actually from someone like my professors to say, you need to have some counselling. And that's when my journey started beginning in understanding my behaviours and my thoughts and my mental health.
So I think a certain degree of anxiety is normal for everybody, particularly if you work in an environment where you're seeing patients every day and you're having to make those clinical decisions. So how did you realise that your anxiety was actually starting to affect your work?
I think one of the biggest things was us losing my purpose and my passion as to why I was even doing my role. I sort of lost that enjoyment a little bit. I wasn't happy when I was going to work. I felt like I was simply surviving the day. I wasn't thriving at all. And quite funnily, I don't realize that my behaviors were reflecting outwards as well. I thought I was managing. I thought I was okay. And what we used to do in my place of work is have a 360 feedback form. And we would ask our colleagues and our team members, you know, what you're doing great and things that you could improve on. And some of the comments were things like, you know, you're quite withdrawn sometimes. Sometimes we don't know whether we can approach you or talk to you. These are from my colleagues. And actually it was a real eye-opener that actually what I was feeling inside was reflecting out there and it was impacting my, you know, relationships with my colleagues. And I hadn't even realised. And that's when I knew I had to make some changes.
360 feedback is one of those things that I, you know, when you have a review, you always dread. But I suppose if it's used in the right way by managers and people in who do lead teams, then it can actually be quite useful, can't it? And really helpful in some cases.
Yeah, it's nice to hear all the great things you do. But when people start commenting on, you know, things that you can improve on, it is, you have to have a bit of a thick skin. And if you're struggling with anxiety and mental health issues, then, you know, it can feel a bit more difficult to take and approach those things. But looking back, it did definitely plant that seed, and I had to start making and implementing daily changes.
So let's go back to your story. You did extra qualifications in mental health and therapy. So how did that change the way you think about your job as an optometrist?
It changed quite a lot. I thought, you know, in optometry as a profession, you know, optometrists feel quite isolated. And even if you're working with other optometrists as well, you know, if you've got a busy clinic, you don't have that much time to speak to your colleagues, even if it's your teammates, your assistants, whether it's the manager or other optometrists in your practice. And I thought there just needs to be much more awareness around well-being, even communicating with your patients. If you are not having that empathy there, you might be the best clinician, you might have the best skills and knowledge in one aspect, but if you haven't got the human interaction and acknowledging your patient's well-being as well, then there's only so much you can really get out of an eye test and eye examination. That's not just pure clinical results. And so I started looking into communication. I started looking into awareness of how we can support ourselves, our team, and our patients.
So if someone is listening to this right now and thinking, I think I am going through some of the things that you've mentioned here, you know, I recognise some of those signs or those symptoms, what steps would you recommend?
One, know you're not alone. There are people out there to support you. So knowing you're not alone, communication is vital. So speaking about what you're going through is so important. So whether that's with your friends, whether that's with your family members, whether that's with somebody at work as well, it might not always be easy to speak to your manager. So somebody at work would be really helpful. A healthcare professional, speaking to your GP. You can even just self-refer in the IAPT. There's a self-referral system in the GP. So if you register with the GP, you can self-refer yourself online to some of these services that are available for you on the NHS. And there's so many resources online.
Yes, because as you say, you know, optometry can be quite an isolated profession and in a way quite a lonely profession, because despite the fact that we're talking to patients all day, if you are a sole practitioner or if you work in clinics where you are very busy quite often, you know, I sometimes don't speak to my colleagues until right at the end of the day, and then we're rushing off to do things with our own lives. And sometimes if you've had a difficult day or if you've had a challenging day or if you are struggling, sometimes you do need to talk to someone who's going through the same thing as you in the same environment, because they can empathise and understand what you're going through. And then together, sometimes you might find a solution, which is sometimes difficult to see when you're on your own. So I think it is really important to reach out to your colleagues if you can.
Massively. And when we do things like CPDs, for example, I know that when we optoms get together, or IQ professionals get together, it just feels like a huge release. You know, you start talking about your days and your work and your managers and your place of practice. And I just think you have to connect with people in your profession just to know that actually you're not the only one going through what you are.
Yeah. And it is terrible when optometrists get together, because that we don't stop talking, do we?
Exactly.
So if we looked at mental health conditions as a group, what would be the most common ones that optometrists would suffer from generally in your experience?
It's definitely anxiety. Overwhelm with running behind the clinics, that triggers anxiety. People don't feel that they have people to connect to. So sometimes that isolation, that triggers anxiety. And a lot of optometrists also don't feel valued. So their confidence is start slipping.
How can we develop ourselves so we can be more resilient to feeling that way?
I think my top tip, and this is something that I've supported other people with, but it actually really made a difference to myself, is validate yourself. And by that, I mean, do something good for you. So whether that's, you know, sending yourself a little treat, whether that's taking yourself out for coffee, whether that's giving yourself a high five, whatever that may be, it's so important to validate yourself. But then also, I think it's really important that you validate other people. So that sometimes can get reciprocated too. So, you know, buying somebody a coffee at work just to show them your appreciation. But I think it's so important that we start validating ourselves.
And each other.
Exactly.
What do you think should be in place at their place of work, at their practices or within their hospitals? What should be in place by their employers to help optometrists deal with any issues that they might have with their mental health?
I think they need to have something there that, you know, if somebody is going through any issues, what are the resources we've got available on a list somewhere, on some paperwork somewhere, that they know that these are the contacts they can reach, these are the people they can look at, these are the resources you can go to support your well-being. So even if they have like a well-being champion in each practice, that would be really good, so that somebody can physically go to somebody and say, actually, I'm struggling with this. I think that would be fantastic. But just having some sort of information to point people in the right direction, that these are the people you can go to, these are the resources available for you. And I also really think that CPD and well-being should be implemented. We have CPD for lots of clinical things, but I think CPD on well-being can make a huge difference to your everyday person when you practice as well. So I think that should be implemented too.
And the CPD is interactive as well, usually, isn't it, on mindfulness and well-being? So I think that's another really great advantage, because I have to do manager training at work, and one of the courses that I do is stress awareness. But I've got to say, if it's the same every 12 months, it's not very engaging. It's not very interesting.
Yeah.
So it's about finding the right type of CPD, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And, you know, the CPD that I've been creating in the last few months, you know, I do breath work. So I'm teaching them how to manage their own breath, because a lot of times we're in flight mode. So if you're getting overwhelmed, that you're running behind your patients, how can you manage your anxiety and your calm levels? So I'm teaching people how to breathe in my CPD sessions right now, so that they can use that at the beginning of the day, throughout the day, end of the day, any of those times. It just takes a few seconds and it can really trigger your parasympathetic nervous system to allow you to calm and respond to a situation rather than react to a situation.
So in your experience, have you found that managers or employers sometimes downplay the importance of well-being at work, or resist implementing good practices that we would all like to see in place?
Yes, 100%. Lots of managers that I've worked with, yeah, they absolutely do downplay mental health issues. And I understand they have their own pressures. They're worried about things like their KPIs and things like that. And if somebody is going through something, there's not always that time given to, let's see, how can we support you? And I think that needs to change.
How do you think we can change things?
Awareness and training. And just, I think the key thing is understanding the difference when you are looking after your well-being, how it can impact you. So by dismissing it, what is the impact? And by acknowledging it, what's the impact? And the difference is huge. When you're dismissing it, that person is trying to hide it. They're still not productive. They're not feeling positive. The outcome is still going to be probably quite reduced in the day, in their tasks and their roles and their job. When you're acknowledging it and you're feeling supported and you're feeling looked after and you're feeling cared for, you're going to feel that bit more upbeat. You're going to feel that more positive, and then you are going to feel that much more productive as well.
As optometrists, we are really fixated with running on time. Not running behind seems to be, you know, a big deal to all of us. So that sometimes means that optometrists don't take a break when they should do. And that can't be good for us, can it?
No, absolutely not. So I know and I appreciate that, yes, running on time should be a factor in, you know, allowing the clinics to run smoothly. Sometimes there might be times when, you know, you are running behind, but when you do get those breaks, you know, use them to your advantage. Don't try and do other extra jobs or try and think about other things or other tasks. You know, really use that and use that as your self-care time.
And I think it's important to always take that break, isn't it? I mean, even if you are running behind, I don't think there's any patient that would be so unreasonable to be angry with you if you had to take 10 minutes to have a break at lunchtime, because they wouldn't want to see someone who's not at their best.
Exactly. And, you know, I was doing a CPD on well-being about a week ago. And one of the things what the optometrist wanted to work on was increasing the hydration. Basically, they weren't drinking enough water. When we questioned why, she was saying it's because she's so busy in the day, she can't even get time to go and take a rest break to go to the toilet. And that's why she was not drinking enough water. And that was something that had to change. Just taking that 5 minutes out to take that break, it was so vital. And that could make a big difference to her day. But I think taking a break needs to be a priority as much as running clinics on time. If you're not taking a break, then you're not going to feel good. And making that, like you say, awareness to your team as well, that actually I'm taking this 5 minutes, I'm taking this 10 minutes, I'm taking 2 minutes is so, so valid. So whether they can run other tests, whether they can pre-dispense, there are other things that they may be able to do, so that allowing you to have that time to take for yourself.
And finally, what are your top resources would you recommend that optometrists turn to help them look after their own mental health?
I would always say my two go-to websites are the NHS website, first of all, and then the Mind UK. They have such useful resources there and have different things to help you as well. So if one thing isn't working there, they'll point you to different things to try out as well. So you might have CBT, you might have mindfulness, you might have talking therapies, and you will find something that then supports you.
Thank you, Sheena. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
From speaking to Sheena, it's clear that workplace stress and burnouts can contribute to a decline in mental health. Coming up, I'll ask Dr. Rachel Morris how to manage workplace stress and how to reduce the risk of burnout. You're listening to Sound Optometry with me, Michelle Hanratty. Every month, we explore the topics that matter the most to us optometrists. And to help guide our future content, we want to hear from you. If there's a topic you want to know more about, or if you have an interesting patient story, it could be the perfect springboard for a podcast topic. Email us. The address is podcast@dockets.info, or you can tweet us @soundoptometry. It's crucial that better support is in place for optometrists, as it can be quite an isolated and high-pressure work environment. This year's workforce survey from the GOC found that 41% of optical professionals felt unable to cope with their workload. That's almost 5% higher than in the previous year. What's more, 57% of members reported working beyond their hours, and 9% of respondents had to take leave of absence at some point because of stress. Problems like burnout in the workplace can unfortunately be the first step in a downward spiral of your mental health. To help me understand this better, I'm now joined by Dr. Rachel Morris. Rachel previously worked as a GP, but has retrained as an executive coach. She also has her own wellbeing podcast called You Are Not a Frog. Thanks for joining me, Rachel.
Oh, you're welcome. It's brilliant to be here. Thanks for having me.
Rachel, as a former GP and an executive coach, from your experience, what cues should we all be on the lookout for if we're worried about a colleague's stress levels or possible burnout?
There's so many, because stress can affect you in all sorts of ways. The main thing I would say is to look out for a change in somebody's behaviour. We're all different, and some people might be quite withdrawn. You don't see them much anyway. But if somebody who's always popping out for coffees, always very cheerful and friendly and chirpy, suddenly becomes quite withdrawn and not interacting, then that is quite a good sign. I mean, we all know about the physical signs of stress, you know, feeling quite shaky, often going off sick. So often your immune system gets battered and you start to go off sick with all sorts of viral illnesses, things like that. And I don't know about you, Michelle, but when I'm stressed and got a lot on, I start to forget things as well. I
just
drop a million balls. There's quite a good reason for that neuroscientifically, because your prefrontal cortex, which is the bit of your brain that's responsible for making decisions, learning stuff, all your executive functioning, if you've got too much on, it's a bit like your phone or a computer, whether you've got too many apps open or too many programs running, you can't actually cope with more than one or two things going on at once. And so your processing just slows down, and stress affects that processing too. And then some people display more addictive behaviours, not just alcohol and drugs, but things that we use to self-soothe and make ourselves feel better, like chocolate and caffeine and binging on Netflix when that's not particularly helpful for us at midnight, things like that. Sleep can often be a problem. So if you notice in a colleague that they're looking quite tired, then, you know, just asking them how they're sleeping can be a big clue.
Yes.
One of the signs of burnout actually is a lack of empathy. So if you find that somebody's pretty cynical about stuff, not caring about people quite in the way that they used to, starting to dread going to work, sort of giving little comments about, oh, you know, who'd want to do this sort of job, then that is a pretty good sign of stress.
So are there any particular triggers associated with working in healthcare in particular?
I think working in healthcare is a hard job, because it's very taxing on the brain. So you've got to think a lot about stuff. And you're also delivering a service, a time-bound service. So you have all the patients coming through the door. You've got to be thinking and problem solving. So you've got all the issues associated with dealing with the general public, and also with dealing with people who might not be at their best because they're worried, they're ill, they're stressed. And you also feel quite responsible for them. So I think you've got this sort of perfect storm of trying to deliver a service under a lot of pressure.
I always feel that when you're working in a face-to-face situation, that no matter how you're feeling inside, how tired you might be or how grumpy you might be, you've still got to put on that very sort of friendly, smiling, caring face for patients, because they come to you when they need you. And actually maintaining that over a whole day can actually be quite mentally exhausting as well, can't it?
Oh, it is. I always used to think when I was a GP that my patient at the end of the day, after, you know, my 29th, 30th, 31st patient gets a very different me than my 8:30 patient. Definitely, you just, you know, by the end of the day, sometimes it does feel that you haven't got quite as much to give as you would want to, because we're human beings. I think that's the problem. We're human beings. We have limits. We get tired. But quite rightly, the patients expect you to be able to give your best all the time.
So Rachel, what would be your top tips for self-help if someone felt that they needed to try and address some of their stress themselves, perhaps have a better balance between their life and their work?
A couple of things. The first thing I would say, and this is something I base all my training on, is stay in your zone of power. So this is a very, very simple concept. And if people wanted to try out, all they need to do is get an A4 sheet of paper and draw a circle in the middle. And the blank sheet of paper represents the whole of your life. The circle in the middle is the stuff that you are in control of. Now, there's lots of stuff on the outside of that circle, like COVID, like patient demand, like the markets, like politics, like other people. We have no control over that. We really don't. And if we focus on those sorts of things to make ourselves feel better, then the only option we've got is to get very stressed and anxious. However, if we start to focus on what we can control, the stuff in that circle, then we actually stand some chance of making things better for ourselves. So what can we control? Well, firstly, how we look after ourselves, our own well-being. So things like making sure you're being active, making sure you're eating well, you're getting to bed on time, that you're not self-soothing with lots and lots of alcohol and chocolate, for example, because we know that that will make you feel worse. Secondly, we can take control of how we respond to certain situations. We can't always control that initial reaction that we get, but actually once we've had a chance to stop and think and get ourselves out of our stress zone, then we can change some of those thought processes and some of the mindsets that we've got around that. Now, a really fantastic book that people could check out is called The Chimp Paradox by Professor Steve Peters, which really talks about how we're reacting in our stress zone to things, and giving ourselves a bit of a break and some self-compassion can be really, really helpful. And then thinking about actually what else could I do? What choices do I have that could help me? And so how I manage my time, how I manage my workload, those are things that we can look at. And there are all sorts of tools to help do that. But you need to make sure you're operating in your zone of control, in your zone of power, not outside of it for the basic resilience stuff. And you'll hear that people that have managed to beat stress and burnout are always people that have worked out actually what is it that they can do rather than what is it that other people can do. Does that make sense?
It does. And also it's about identifying if you can't do it directly, is there someone else that can help you do that? So for example, your manager or your organisation.
Totally. And that's in your zone of power, right? So in my zone of power is flagging up that I need help, asking for help and having those conversations with people. And many, many people haven't even done that basic step.
So mental health awareness and being aware of stress and burnout hasn't really reached prominence in optometry yet. What do we need to do as a profession to make this subject, to make this topic more prominent?
I think awareness, firstly, will increase as people get more stressed and burnt out. People will start to realise what an issue is as people see people going off sick with stress and burnout, and as people start to leave their work because of stress and burnout, that will automatically make it more prominent. Other things you can do is just, I would always start with the managers and the leaders of the teams, and building into any one-to-one reviews that you have, anytime you have a sort of mini appraisal or a three-monthly check or whatever, is just having a few questions that you ask people. I know that they've built this into the GP appraisal system now, that there's a big emphasis on the well-being of the doctor that they're talking to with the appraisers. And one thing that I do and I encourage people to do is use something called the stress curve to just routinely to ascertain how people are doing. So the stress curve is a very simple depiction based on some work done by Yerkes and Dodson. And it just shows what happens to your performance under increasing pressure. And it's essentially a bell-shaped curve. So if you think about pressure on the x-axis and performance on the y-axis. As you are under more pressure, your performance actually goes up because we need a bit of pressure to perform. I need some deadlines to get anything done, right? And in an ideal world, our performance would just keep going upwards in a linear fashion under increasing pressure. But we know that doesn't happen. We know that at some point you peak on your performance, and as the pressure increases, you start to drop down that curve. You start to go down on your performance. And this is a really helpful depiction because there's different areas of this curve. There's the area where you haven't got enough to do, so you're a bit bored. That's area one. There's the area of peak performance when you're at the top of the curve where everything's fine. You're performing really well. Then there's that area where you've just started to slip off the curve, where you start to forget things. You think, I haven't really been on my A game today. And then you've got area four when you're actually starting to get unwell. And a really useful thing for managers to do is just say to people, look, here's a stress curve. Where are you at the moment on this curve? And if someone's saying, I think I might be maybe just starting to slip off the top of it a bit, then they're probably further on than they admit. And then you can have a conversation about, okay, so what factors have caused you to slip off there? And is there anything that you can do to get yourself back to peak performance? And it opens up a conversation. And I find that using the stress curve is a much easier way to get into the conversation than just saying to someone, right, tell me, are you stressed? Are you well?
Yes.
And if the managers and leaders model that as well, saying, actually, you know what? I felt a bit stressed last week, so I've made sure that I'm taking my lunch break.
That's one of the things as optometrists we're not very good at. When you things are starting to pile up a little bit, you think, well, actually, we need to keep going. But actually, it is important to have that break and then restart and press that reset button.
Oh, absolutely, totally. And I would say that if you want to get well-being and everything to the front of people's mind, start making it a priority in your practice, saying we are all going to take a half an hour lunch break. Make a time when you can all have coffee together. Say, right, this is a compulsory coffee break. You know, even if you just get here for 5 minutes, we want to see you just because we think it is so, so important. And there's all the different ways to well-being. Connecting is one of the ways to well-being. Just connecting for 5 minutes with colleagues will make a huge difference to people in the day. And I know that in general practice through COVID, a lot of people lost the coffee breaks because they've just started to work through telephone lists as opposed to having set times when they were seeing patients. But just putting those coffee breaks back in so you can get your connecting, enforcing a lunch break. And if you can do a 5 minute walk around the block that you get your activity in, that's two ways to well-being. And then the final one is noticing. So maybe suggesting people are able to take a little bit of time for some mindful breaths or something like that. But I really think if role modeling by the leaders to help them with that.
There are some really good suggestions there, Rachel. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It seems that a few small adjustments to our routines and our outlook on work can make a big difference to both our own mental health and the well-being of colleagues. If you would like more information about mental health in optometry, go to our website, docit.info, and search for Sound Optometry. There, you can also find the additional reading materials and resources that we've talked about in this episode. By listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on the website, you can gain one CPD point covering professionalism and communication. We'd really appreciate it if you help spread the word about the podcast. Tell your colleagues to listen or subscribe to the series so you don't miss an episode. The producer is Jason Hoskin. I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thanks for listening.